Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and now the DK Network. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from the D. Downtown Bar Canada at the D. Kelly, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. How you doing, man?
Doing very well.
Just got a lot of new buttons over here to figure out and push, you know. New digs for us, loving it, you know.
You got your Florida State couture on today?
Of course I do, man. Might have to lower the screen. But hey, number one, let's go.
Fear of the spear.
Knocking out that top five team.
We'll talk to Pete Futak about Florida State and LSU last night, which, at halftime, I didn't know what to make of that game. But I certainly knew what to make of it at the end. We'll talk to Futak about everything that happened last night and what was, you know, supposed to be the marquee matchup of the weekend. And I guess by rankings it was, but obviously Colorado takes all the headlines. We'll talk about all the implications there, betting-wise, on the show. Frank Schwab, rather, on the NFL. Paul Spohr on Major League Baseball. Todd Wishnev on the weekend of in-game betting in college football. He went 21-16 betting in-game bets this weekend.
Whew.
Just a cavalcade of in-game bets. Wes Reynolds will join us to talk all things sports as well. I want to start with Colorado just because what a shot in the arm for college football this is. However you fall on Colorado, and by the way, I can't imagine you fall anything negative-wise after yesterday. Even I was on the record as saying I didn't love the way that Deion Sanders necessarily handled the transition. But boy, who cares when it comes to what we see on the football field? Colorado gets it done outright as 21-point dogs. Saw 20.5, close at 21 in some spots against TCU. TCU, of course, in the title game last year. They win it 45-42 and do so in spectacular fashion, just absolute spectacular fashion. 86 new players, Travis Hunter's two-way display, 80 snaps as a cornerback, 64 as a wideout. He caught 11 passes for 119 yards. That was the second most on the team. Dylan Edwards was 5 for 135, 3 touchdowns. Xavier Weaver, 6 for 118. Jimmy Horn Jr., 11 for 117 and a touch. And Travis Hunter's best play, probably the catch that was not a catch in the end zone when he was closely defended. Just an unbelievable display. By the way, I've done the on-pace. On pace for 1,728 snaps in the regular season. You're welcome.
It's incredible.
And then Shedeur Sanders, who just, 510 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. Colorado, as far as next week's game, because we could just push it forward to that. Colorado was a 8.5-point dog on the look ahead against Nebraska. Their season win total was 3.5. They were 200-1 to win the national championship. Easy, everybody on the national championship. Shedeur was 150-1 to win the Heisman. Travis Hunter was 100-1 to win the Heisman. Now, as we sit here today, live at the D, Colorado is a 3-point favorite against Nebraska. That is a 11.5-point move. Their season win total is up to 5 from 3.5. Cut in half for the national championship. Again, easy, everybody on the national championship. Let's relax. 100-1. Shedeur is 30-1 to win the Heisman. Travis Hunter, 30-1 to win the Heisman. Now, let me say this. A few things. Well, there's so many things. One, I was asked, first, for those who had Colorado pre-flop money line, congratulations. Mazel tov to you. 8-1. Good for you.
Shout out Mike Pritchard.
Mike Pritchard.
Because I'm sure he did. Come on.
Mike Pritchard, Colorado graduate.
He told us he was taking the points. There's no way he didn't play the money line, too.
But for those who wanted to wait and see, because most of us had no idea, and let me just talk about no idea. I'm going to do a whole bunch of parenthetical sides. We always talk about the notion of CLV in sports betting and the notion of oh, I got the best of it. Can we just all agree that none of us knows a damn thing about much when it comes to the first week of anything? Let's keep this in mind when it comes to week one of the NFL this coming week. It certainly was the case in college football, week zero and week one. Hawaii yesterday, this weekend they opened as a 10-point dog, closed as only a 2.5-point dog against Stanford. They beat them by 13. North Texas opened as a 10-point dog, closed only a 4.5-point dog against Cal. Cal crushed them by 37. UTSA, people were betting it like the game was already played. they were down 10. They lost by 3. They got up to a 3-point favorite in that game. Everybody was betting Colorado State like the game was already played. Wazoo beat them by 26. Northwestern, they were a 7-point dog. Then they were only a 5-point dog. Rutgers beat them by 24-7. Wildcats were lucky to even score in that game. San Jose State, another CLV winner, beaten by Oregon State by, 25 points, 42-17. Anyway, you get the idea. Colorado, the biggest example of this. Again, 21-point dogs winning it outright. Maybe not the biggest, but one of the bigger ones. Immediately, even if you didn't have a pre-flop bet, first drive for TCU, followed by midway through the first drive for Colorado, I immediately texted Will, Felica, Fezzik, Wishnev. I'm like, I'm in, plus 316 money line. And that wasn't even the best number. Some people got better numbers. And then a subsequent bet on the next drive was like plus 280 something. People got better numbers than that. But the point being that in-game remains so much better than anything pre-flop, particularly in week one, and particularly in a game like this where no one had any idea what they were getting on Colorado. It was so clear from the beginning. Now, it might not have gotten there, right? It got close at the end. But Colorado gets it done. And I think everybody who laid their eyes on that could see they were well coached. Their athletes were 1,000 times better. And then the question was, okay, once the game ended, what do you think, or even as the game was winding out, what do you think the line against Nebraska will be next week? Because Nebraska didn't look particularly good in their game against Minnesota, and Colorado did what Colorado did. And I said, I don't know, is it flipped? Like I said, 7.5, and it didn't seem that outlandish to me. It's 3 now. I'm going to say it's going to be above 3. And there's a lot of people out there who are like, oh, it's way too much of a reaction already. I don't think it is. I don't think it's too much of a reaction at all. It is 3 right now in favor of Colorado. Now, we made an error. We just talked about how Shedeur Sanders was 150-1 before that game, and now he's 30-1. There were 150-1 still out there after the game. Some of us might have gotten a piece of that.
Oh, did you? Because when I went shopping, there was nothing. They were all off the board when I went shopping.
Yeah, well, I went shopping. I went shopping in a wider net of a place. Let's just put it that way.
I got you. No, what I want to hit on there, though, so you only bet Sanders, not Hunter?
I wanted to bet Hunter, okay. Too. But I only have Sanders so far. But I will bet Hunter at 30-1 also.
You want to know what my biggest takeaway from that game was? Was simply from a betting standpoint in the shows that we do all summer long. Talking about getting ready for the football season, NFL, college football. Hey, next time when we're getting ready for a college football season, if there's going to be some stud on any team who's starting at wide receiver and cornerback, give me a heads up because I'm probably going to take a flyer on that. I just don't know these guys, Gil, you know? Come on.
Well, I mean, and to the degree that he did so and to the level of excellence.
It was incredible. It was incredible.
It was incredible every which way. So there's the there was the in-game realization. There was the get on those Heisman numbers, 150-1. I'll take that all day long. Mm-hmm. I don't think the line is an overreaction at all. I don't think the Heisman move is an overreaction at all because you don't know with these guys. Even if they get to a bowl game and this were to sustain over a full season, and yes, I know Caleb Williams is still out there and any number of other players are still out there. But give me that triple digit. I'll take that triple digit. I'll even take 30-1 on either of these guys.
Well,
sure.
I had this conversation yesterday. With Nebraska on deck, you might be sitting here and saying, okay, you missed out on the 150-1. It's 30-1 now. Or, you know, triple digits and it's 30, whatever, or whatever you can find now. I mean, there's an argument to make if you're really that excited about it. I'm not. I'm kind of still kind of like, okay, let's see how this plays out. I'm just rooting for Prime and Chaos because, yes, he got hated on so much by so many college football heads throughout the offseason, and he stuck to his guns of how he was going to build his program, and man, it worked week one at least.
It sure did.
So I don't know where we're going to go forward, but Gil, like, there's a chance. I mean, if they end up rolling Nebraska, like, those 30-1s go to 15-10-1.
Oh, there's no question.
So
now, do I think they'll beat an Oregon?
Right.
Not necessarily.
USC.
Right. I don't. But Nebraska, like, for those who say, oh, that's such an overreaction. Did you watch Nebraska and did you watch Colorado? And remember, this is going to be an elevation. This is going to be at, 5,420 feet, as they like to say in the Mile High City. Their new fast-paced style of play. This was in 100-plus degrees the other day. against TCU.
Which is makes Travis Hunter even more impressive.
It's unbelievable.
The 111 snaps.
And I just want to say this again. It's such a shot in the arm for college football in the final year of the 4-team playoff where, again, it's top heavy. We know the usual suspects are going to vie for the national championship. And this team isn't. This just in. But I'll just tell you, I'm supposed to go to the Giants game on Friday in San Francisco. Typically, if I did that, I would come back at a leisurely pace on a Saturday morning. They're playing Saturday morning. I made sure, I'm not even kidding.
Whoa!
I made sure to get like a 6 a.m. flight just so I don't have any distractions and I can watch Colorado.
Like must-watch TV for Gil Alexander.
No, I'm saying that, but that's how great. I was texting those guys also. It's like nothing's going to top this for the rest of the weekend, even Florida State LSU, which we'll get to.
Nothing did.
The other thing that we'll get to later also with Wishnev and maybe with Futak in college football are these coaches that know the point spread and so clearly know the point spread. James Franklin at Penn State, 4th and 2 at the West Virginia 12 with 1:41 left, up 16. The point spread is, 21, I think it was. They pass for a first down. 1st and goal at the West Virginia 5 with 1:05 left in the clock ticking. They rush for no gain. They keep going. 29 seconds left at the 5. No reason to do anything. Rush again, this time in the end zone. They win by 23, covering the 21-point spread. And then Mark Stoops at Kentucky, not to be lost in the shuffle, favored by 25.5 over Ball State. They're up 23. They start the drive, the last drive at their own, in their own territory. 3:22 left. 4 pass plays down the field. You're up 23. What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're trying to cover the spread is what you're doing. Then they do, after the 4 pass plays, they do eventually score on a 30-yard scamper at the end. But 4 pass plays down the stretch. All of these things to keep in mind as you watch college football here in the early going and then even beyond. What a start to the college football season. In earnest, week one, I know there was a week zero. We'll come back. We'll talk some Major League Baseball and, oh my, Iga Swiatek at the U.S. Open next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live at the D here, Bar Canada, downtown. Don't forget our betting guide is out, our NFL betting guide, that is 2023. Updates for every team, best bets, betting splits tutorial, contest strategies. Oh, contests begin this week. All you have to do is subscribe for as low as $19. All the information is at vsin.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin here. Kelly, you okay over there? In the you like your vantage point? You're getting used to it over there?
It's going to take a little bit, but we're getting
used
to
it. Side of the table? Kelly is literally like 7 feet away from it. What do you say? 5 feet? 6 feet? Like a human being
could lie right between us? We're one human being away from
each other. Split screen, though. I like it. It's very cool. All right, we'll get to college football, more college football in a bit with Pete Futak from College Football News, also Todd Wishnev. Couple things, though, otherwise going on in the sports world. Last night, tennis, U.S. Open, round of 16. The world number one, or now the former world number one, Iga Swiatek, beaten in 3 sets by Yelena Ostapenko. Yelena Ostapenko now career record against Swiatek, 4-0, as she just absolutely rolls Swiatek in the 3rd set. She could not have looked better. Swiatek could not have looked like she had fewer answers to Yelena Ostapenko. And so, with that, Swiatek loses her number one ranking. 75 straight weeks at number one was Swiatek, and now Aryna Sabalenka will be the new world number one in women's tennis. But the question becomes, because we had the Swiatek Djokovic parlay, if you will, and we also had Swiatek straight to win this. Still have some of our quarters, a couple of our quarters still alive, although Tommy Paul bid it yesterday. We still have Marketa Vondrousova on the ladies' side. We still have Alex de Minaur on the men's side. What does this do with futures in terms of the women's draw now? Who would be the correct bet here? I think Coco Gauff is the appropriate short shot. Coco Gauff, who has had just an amazing summer. She won in Washington. She won in Cincinnati. She's plus 275. I know it's not the sexiest number, but I think that's appropriate. If you're asking me, what's the longer shot? What's the play? Believe it or not, it's Marketa Vondrousova, who, again, I have winning Q3. Marketa Vondrousova to win this tournament is plus 650. If you're just looking at raw data, raw tennis numbers in terms of serve, in terms of return of serve, Vondrousova was number 2 to Iga. Coco Gauff was number 3. So I fully expect a Coco Gauff Marketa Vondrousova finals match. They obviously have a lot of work, the both of them, to do so to do before they get to that. Vondrousova has a round of 16 match today. Coco already into the quarterfinals, but it was Coco who had the gauntlet, and she is safe into the quarter. So I think Gauff and Vondrousova meet in the finals, and I think those are the best bets on the board. Gauff plus 275, Vondrousova plus 650, now with Iga out of it. The men's side remains the same. Still, Novak Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz at the top, with Novak having the more greased route into the finals. Although I will say this, Novak had himself a very difficult, well, I shouldn't say very difficult, because as far as five setters go and being down 2-0, that was about the cleanest come-from-behind two-sets-down match there was, with Novak taking on his countryman Laszlo Dejere the other day. So Novak, the appropriate short shot there. Have you watched any U.S. Open at all during a football weekend?
I will be honest. I got wrapped up mainly with college football this weekend. I only watched a little bit. I watched some of the Paul match yesterday, but that was about it. Yeah, Ben Shelton, yeah.
149-mile-per-hour serve.
Yeah, that's fast.
The record is John Isner, who's in the 150s, but he's 6'10". So you might expect that from a guy like that. But Ben Shelton knocking down 149s.
About 13 years ago, I once did a local TV piece of, I wanted to see if one of my interns could return an Andy Roddick serve. That was very, very entertaining for about 30 minutes as he was getting balls just rocketed at him.
Oh, that stuff goes right by you. Shelton hit one that went right at Tommy Paul, and you're like, did he mean to do that?
Right, exactly.
We're going to talk to Paul Spohr about baseball here, because baseball is just absolutely killing it right now in terms of the races. There's roughly 25 games left in the season, so this is a short enough runway where if you're still making, for instance, yes-no playoff bets or division winner bets, you also want to be aware of tiebreakers. I think we're close enough to the end here where we can finally throw that out and be like, okay, just be aware of this, that if these two or three teams end up in a tie, here's what would happen. And so the two things that are the most sort of up in the air, first of all, the National League, third wild card position. As of this moment, four teams are deadlocked for the number three wild card position. The Miami Marlins, the San Francisco Giants, and the Arizona Diamondbacks are all percentage points ahead of the Cincinnati Reds, who have played two extra games. Cincinnati only has 23 games left. Cincinnati is one game ahead in both the win and loss, or I should say they have one more win and one more loss. So really, percentage points only separates them. So in essence, it's a four-way tie. But if you want to know in terms of, okay, well, what happens then at the end of the season if these teams are tied? And it's complicated. There's certainly different permutations of it. But what you would really need to know is that first of all, strength of schedule. Let's just talk opposing strength of schedule. The Marlins have the toughest go of it. Their opposing strength of schedule is 542. Their opponent's aggregate win percentage, 542. That's like the fifth hardest remaining schedule in all of baseball. The other three teams, the Reds, the Giants, and the Diamondbacks. Giants, 495 opposing schedule. Arizona, 481. Cincinnati, 476. They have the easiest of it. But in terms of tiebreakers, the Giants rule the roost there. They are tied with the Marlins. That is a complete season series, 3-3, but the Giants would actually get in over them on intra-division record. By the way, that's the number two tiebreaker, Kelly. It goes from head-to-head straight to something called intra-division, which means even if you're in different divisions, they would break it down based on the Giants' record in the NL West versus the Marlins' record in the NL East, which is a really bizarre tiebreaker to have.
Because so every division is created equal, yeah.
Sure, exactly. Of course, the Giants have a ton of games left against the Dodgers, it should be noted. But the Giants would have the tiebreaker over the Marlins based on that. They would have it over the Reds. They completed the series season series against the Reds 4-3. And currently with two games left against the Diamondbacks, and those two games are going to be at Arizona September 19th and September 20th, the Giants hold a 6-5 edge over the Diamondbacks. So even if they get the split there, the Giants would have all tiebreakers for the number three wild card position against those teams in the National League. Now, obviously, there's other possibilities with the Cubs and all kinds, and even the Padres mathematically on the downside. But we're just talking about the four teams currently deadlocked for that number three position. The Giants would hold that. If you're wondering about the other ones, Arizona, as we mentioned, they still have a shot to get by the Giants with those two games. They lost the season series to the Marlins 4-2, and they lost the season series to the Reds 4-3. So while the Giants would win all tiebreakers, Arizona's in a position where they would lose all tiebreakers. And then the Marlins and the Reds in between, by the way, it should mention that Cincinnati is currently barely behind the Marlins in intra-division record. We don't even want to get into that if that happened between the Reds and the Marlins. So just know that the Giants have the best of it in that group, and the Diamondbacks currently, that could change with those two games later this month, the Diamondbacks currently have the worst of it. The other one would be in the National League West, where right now the Mariners have a one-game lead over Houston and the Rangers. And again, this would come down to when it's a three-way deal, if one team has the best of it over the other two, that would be the tie-break advantage. If it's all jumbled up, then they would have to go to different tiebreakers. Currently, in that situation with Texas, well, really, it's Seattle, Texas, and Houston, and then there's a second tiebreaker that would have to deal with the last wild card, which would be the two teams that don't win the AL West. And we'll throw in the Blue Jays as the other teams. The Blue Jays are only 1.5 back of that final wild card position. Essentially, what you need to know about that is that with Seattle, Texas, and Houston, there's too much in terms of no one dominates the other two at this point. We'll take it from Seattle's perspective. They got crushed by the Rangers so far this year. The Rangers have won 5 out of 6, but there's 7 games remaining. Meanwhile, the Mariners crushed the Astros 8 out of 10 with only 3 games remaining, so they already clinched the season series with the Astros, but clearly are behind the 8-ball with the Rangers. You can do that for each one of those three teams, and it's good and bad. So there is no consensus head-to-head winner currently in that. When it comes to the notion of the Blue Jays and being tied with those other two teams, the Blue Jays right now won the season series. They already won it against the Astros 4-3. They are tied with the Mariners, but they will lose on intra-division record to the Mariners, it should be pointed out, and they are currently down 2-1 to the Rangers with 4 remaining. So much more jumbled, not even worth a discussion, really, to be honest with you, even though we just had one for 90 seconds to just roll through it. But between, it's much more muddied in terms of Seattle, Houston, and Texas in the AL West, and then the two teams that don't win the AL West with the Blue Jays in the American League. The National League, when you're placing those National League bets, that's much more definitive. Be very aware that the Giants win all tiebreakers currently, and that the Diamondbacks lose all tiebreakers currently. And with 25 games left in the season, 23 for the Reds, that becomes something you want to keep in mind because there ain't that many games left to determine it. Should be fascinating. Should be very fascinating with the Marlins having the most difficult schedule of the four down the stretch. We'll come back. Pete Futak will join us. We'll talk more college football. What about Kelly's FSU Seminoles?
Hey-o.
What did we learn from that last night? Was it the utter second half domination, or was the first half kind of deceiving, or was it both? It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The updated NFL betting guide is out now. Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide will have picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, and football contest strategies. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now is the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19. Or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from the D, downtown, Bar Canada here. Can't say the tip of the strip anymore. Downtown. That's what we got to say, right?
Yeah.
Downtown.
Oh, tip of the strip, just the other side.
So the tip of the strip.
The other side of it.
There's two tips of the strip, apparently. Ladies and gentlemen, this is just the most hectic time of the year for this guy with all the full week college football happening. But we love having him nonetheless as he squeezes us in to his schedule. CollegeFootballNews.com, emperor and founder, Peter Futak. How you doing, Pete?
I dig the new shot. Now you can watch people come in behind you and place their bets.
And, oh, it's awesome.
You know, kind of judge them as they go and give them advice. I'm sure they'll love that.
Well, I look a little reddish, don't I, here on this lighting? Reddish.
You're beautiful. You're Gil Alexander. You reddish. Get the shot, not the other way around.
Hey.
You blush every time Pete comes on.
That's what it is. I'm blushing, yeah. Pete. I just love having you so much. Let's start with, I want to get to Colorado, obviously, because to me, and I started the show by saying, like, I am so into Colorado, not just with bets now, but I'm literally scheduling flights so I don't miss any of the game on Saturday. We'll get to that. I want to talk about the game last night first, which is really was the marquee matchup, at least on paper, in college football heading into the weekend between Florida State and LSU. And I asked this of Kelly earlier. I'll ask this of you, which is, yes, in the end, Florida State absolutely rolled LSU in the second half of this ball game on their way to a 45-24 stomping of the previously or about to be not ranked top five LSU Tigers, who were 2-point favorites in this. But the first half was, you know, a couple fourth and shorts that LSU didn't convert. One was right at the doorstep on the very first drive. Jordan Travis had a couple plays where I was like, what is he doing? Like, why would he throw that ball up in the air? And he got away with it, right? FSU did. LSU could have been up a couple touchdowns at the half. I get it, they weren't. But when you put all that in the mix, what's your takeaway from this football game?
Exactly what you said. I was thinking it was going to start rolling the other way. I mean, I as Dion would say, I wasn't a believer. I wasn't a believer in Florida State. I wasn't buying in, but the transfers helped. Keon Coleman from Michigan State turned out to be the difference at wide receiver. Jordan Travis, like you said, kind of had problems early, settled down. And the lines held up, but I was with you. There were a couple of mistakes in the red zone right out of the gate in the first drive for LSU. And there are a slew of dropped passes. So you're right. They're but four or five plays. LSU's up, try like three or four touchdowns. And then it's almost like they just kind of punched themselves out and couldn't figure out what they were doing in the second half. So odd game. And that's why week one, and I know we'll get to Colorado, was the prime example of this. I'll punch the attendance. But like, you can't overreact to what just happened because everyone's going to go crazy. The lines are going to go crazy for week two and on based on all of this. LSU's still awesome. You look at the rest of their schedule, they're only going to be the underdogs one more time probably the rest of the way, and that's probably against Alabama. And Florida State's still got to go to Clemson in a couple weeks. Let's see what happens tonight. If Clemson's Clemson, they roll Duke tonight. If they're that good, Florida State's going to have a fight on their hands, and I still think there are a couple games, landmines out there for Florida State. But you're right, that was a great performance against a great team, and Florida State stepped it up and came through.
If Florida State loses to Clemson but then runs the table, they're headed to, and then wins, I mean, obviously then there's an ACC championship, though, but they're still, the Clemson loss does not prohibit them now at this point.
No, and that's the buffer of this game.
Yeah.
That's why I don't know why anybody schedules this game, because if you're LSU, you're screwed, because you can't go 10-2. Next year you can. This year you can't. But you're right. So I actually think that they're going to probably split. If you look at what Clemson and Florida State have, I think Florida State loses at Clemson, probably wins the rematch because there are no divisions in the ACC this year, in the ACC championship, and they both might get in. So the ACC's all of a sudden become way more interesting, not just because of the expansion side of things.
Real before we get to Colorado, you mentioned about why you schedule a game. Felica was throwing this out this weekend. We were talking about, like, what was the most ridiculous decision by a school to schedule a game? Was it Texas Tech going to Wyoming? Like, what's the upside of that kind of game for them?
Okay, if you're Texas Tech, win the game. You're the Power 5 program. Act like it. And that's not a ridiculous. Maybe it's Florida going to Utah, and I know it's a home and home. I just think you week one, and we saw this in some games, obviously not with Colorado and some of the other teams, but the timing was off. You just, especially early on in the process this weekend, it just seems like every team couldn't get their groove down, get their rhythm down. And plus, that you're going to have that with all the new transfers coming in. All the new parts. You're not seeing a whole lot of teams that get back like 10 starters who've been around for 3 or 4 years. So it's going to take a game or two. So as much as we love the big matchups, I always say you schedule Central Cream Puff Tech in week one, and then you get through that, which is why don't fret over Ohio State yet. It's again, week one, even if it's against Indiana, don't go freaking out over Michigan not being amazing quite yet. Just kind of give it a couple weeks, and then everything sort of changes fast.
All right, about Colorado. This was just, I started the show by saying, this is such a shot in the arm for college football, I think. No, they're not winning the national title. But in a year when it's the final year of a four-team playoff and the usual suspects will be the ones competing for that, what a great story this becomes. And I'll tell you, I made a bet on Shedeur Sanders to win the Heisman. I'll make a bet on Travis Hunter to win the Heisman just to have those big numbers out there. I don't know if they get there, but I just want to have those tickets at the current prices, and I got a really good one on Sanders. Everything changed with them, right? Their season win total, adjusted season win total went up to 5. What about this game this weekend? First of all, do you agree with all of that? Are you as excited? And then what about this game against Nebraska where it was an 8.5-point dog as a look-ahead? And now, right behind me here at the D, Colorado is a 3-point favorite. Do you agree with that adjustment?
All right, so to all of it, first of all, I'm probably the biggest Deion Sanders fan ever. I mean, somewhere downstairs in my basement here, there's a jersey from my freshman year in college. I mean, he's my favorite sports personality. With that said, his post-game press conference was a disaster. He can't turn this into us against the world and make people not like him and get all mad at the media and say, oh, you don't believe. That defense stunk. You know, their defense did not come up with the stops against TCU. The other thing to remember with this before getting too excited, TCU only got like 3 starters back. I mean, this was a team that also could have used a week one tune-up. With that said, you don't throw for 500 yards if you're not doing something right. And the big key piece of this is, for all the other parts to Colorado, Sean Lewis from Kent State. He was the head coach there for the last 2 years, ran this flash-fast offense that went a million miles an hour, and the whole argument was, what would happen if you've got really great players to run this thing? And this is where give Coach Prime credit. I mean, I'm a believer in how he put this together. It's like, okay, we had bad players. We're going to get good ones. He just cut through the BS and got there. He made a great decision to get Lewis, to get this guy and get this offense with these players. And boom, here we go. So I'm not – it's great.
And not to interrupt Pete, but like, how about Shedeur Sanders after the game going, I just threw for more yards than I ever have against anyone on any level. I thought that comment sort of stuck with me too.
Well, there's a whole bunch of things. You can fund, and I did, you can fund stat to death the last 9 quarters of TCU football between the Georgia National Championship and that. The second half against of Michigan, they've had a little bit of a rough run defensively. So, but again, you don't do that unless you've got the guys. So they're going to be fun the rest of this way out. In terms of Heisman thing, I'm with you. Shedeur Sanders, maybe. Travis Hunter, no, because he's just not going to have the stats at the end of the day. He might be a finalist in some way, but he's not going to win it. But here's the crazy part about Colorado. As great as they are, they were probably only the fifth or sixth most impressive team in the Pac-12, which is still undefeated.
Yeah,
I mean, Shedeur Sanders is great. Uyunglele, my guy, was amazing. Michael Penix Jr. was great. Nobody has seen Caleb Williams yet because they've been on the Pac-12 network, but USC's been awesome. The whole Pac-12 has been great so far, which means this is just going to be one wild year.
13-0 for the Pac-12 this weekend. Not too shabby at all. Caleb Williams, by the way, remains your short shot for the Heisman, +450, followed by the aforementioned Michael Penix Jr. at 8-1. Jordan Travis of Florida State after his performance yesterday, 10-1. Anything else real quick, because we have only like 45 seconds. What was the other biggest thing, non-Colorado, non-FSU, LSU? What was the biggest takeaway from the weekend, Pete?
I don't have the stats to back me up on this. This is a feeling, so I know it's a numbers game, so please correct me on this. It seemed like Colorado-TCU game aside, every game was struggling to get the points up. That it just the big game, marquee games, LSU, Florida State last night, I do think went over. But for the most part, there were a whole lot of first halves that were like 10-7 that should have been different. My biggest bet of the week was the whole over on South Carolina, North Carolina. That should have been 45-42 track meet and just wasn't. So I'm not sure what the takeaway from week one to week two, but so far it just felt like teams were struggling to score more than they usually are.
All right, Pete, appreciate it. Thank you. He was slept there in today. Slept in, but he's with us. Pete Futak, F-I-U-T-A-K, on the Twitter machine. Wes Reynolds with his Week 1 NFL and Week 2 college football bets next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.